From WXXI News, this is the Summer of Food on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in 1918 in Rochester. Alexander Tahoe opened a restaurant called Hots and Potatoes. And the story of what happened next is often debated a little bit, but it goes something like this. Alexander had already offered a dish that included almost everything on the menu, a mashup of mashed potatoes and meats for starters. His son Nick eventually took over the operation, and one day a couple of college students asked Nick for something with all the garbage on it. So Nick built on the idea of an everything plate. Two hamburger patties, a couple of sides, macaroni salad, beans, home fries, lots of condiments. It was essentially the birth of the garbage plate, but the plate's name was not trademarked until 1992. And now think about how the garbage plate fits into Rochester's food culture. Is it the centerpiece with all the variations now available? Is it a point of pride? Or perhaps do you feel something else when you think about bringing in friends from out of town who want to know, hey, what's your local food scene like? And by the way, is Rochester becoming a barbecue town? What makes a city a barbecue city? When does the high-end dining scene break through into a permanent part of the culture? What about farm-to-table and local food? And if the great James Beard were alive today, would he include a garbage plate recipe in his book on American cookery? On the Summer of Food on Connections, you're going to hear a variety of voices, and this hour I will say hello in studio to Chris Lindstrom, who's the founder of Food About Town, a podcast that you should be listening to, not just because I'll be on it next week, but because you should be listening anyway. He's also the co-founder of Frankly, with a PH. What is Frankly, by the way?
Frankly's a startup out of High Tech Rochester, and we're trying to connect farms and restaurants, make the sourcing and distribution of food and drink completely transparent. So if you want to find your favorite farms in restaurants or find the farms you eat at these great restaurants, you'll be able to do it easily.
Thanks for being here. It's nice to have you.
Absolutely.
Also on the line with us is Eric Hoopert. He is a farmer at Mud Creek Farms, and he's the agricultural editor at Boomtown Table. And Eric, one of the nicest people I know. Nice to have you back on the program, Eric. How are you?
I'm good, Evan. How are you?
Very good. Tell our listeners again, if they don't read Boomtown, what is Boomtown Table?
So Boomtown is, we've kind of developed into a few platforms now. The core of who Boomtown is essentially an online magazine dedicated to the life of local food and drink in our region, specifically Greater Rochester to the Finger Lakes. We've expanded into some more exhaustive media platforms, as well as specialized events in the city, walking tours of neighborhoods, centered around places to eat. We've partnered with Wegmans and Genesee Brewery on some media projects, and we have a few more things in the pipeline this year. But we focus on everything from, you know, new places to eat and things that are going on in our city to agricultural policy and how that affects the food on your plate.
Well, I want to start this conversation this hour as we think about what our identity really is when it comes to food in Rochester with a conversation with the only James Beard-nominated chef in Rochester history, and that is Art Rogers of Lento, which launched 10 years ago. One of the big reasons that Lento ended up a James Beard nominee is because to become a James Beard nominee, you got to be a great chef, but you also have to be influential in your industry. And certainly, the idea of putting the name of the farm on the menu is not new today, but it was pretty revolutionary in Rochester 10 years ago when Art started doing it. He is actually on the road traveling with family, but I caught up with him this morning, and a high-end chef, you would think he'd push back on the garbage plate, I would think. But the first thing I asked him was, when you think about Rochester's food identity, what's the first thing that comes to mind?
I'd say white hots, white hot dogs.
That's the first thing that comes to mind.
You're thinking like specifically about Rochester, New York. Yes, having lived there most of my life, that I would say is like our iconic food that you really can't find or has been duplicated anywhere else.
How do you feel about the garbage plate in that conversation?
Well, I've thought long and hard about it since you emailed me about that. I think it's an okay dish with an unfortunate name. I don't think there's anything wrong with the garbage plate per se as the dish. I mean, it's obviously not anything healthy like that, but I just wish it had a different name because, I don't know, I don't think you want food associated with garbage. At least I usually don't.
That's an interesting way to describe it. I hadn't thought about it like that. And when you think about what you would like people to think about for Rochester, I think you're right. I mean, red and white hots, the garbage plate, but I'm not asking this in a way that seeks to be dismissive of the garbage plate at all. I'm just curious to know, considering you're in the high-end food world, do you aspire to have Rochester thought of in a different way when it comes to food, or is that okay with you?
No, I would love for us to be thought of in a different way. I'd love Rochester to be a food city, a restaurant city, as a destination for people traveling. Be like, you have to go to Rochester. They have such a great food scene, and I think it's getting there. I don't think we're quite there yet, but I would love to be known for more than just that. We have so much great food, and with the Finger Lakes wineries right there, we have the potential to just be an amazing food city. And I think we're getting close, and that would be great if we were, you know, a food destination place like the Finger Lakes.
So,
which is so close.
You know, one of the things that James Beard did in the late 60s when he was putting together his book American Cookery, that ended up being 600 plus pages, 450 recipes, was he traveled and he thought about regional identity, and he included recipes from different regions after trying to kind of make some decisions on what, you know, is sort of valid when it comes to certain regional identities and what is not. So if you were undertaking that task today, and you had to come up with a couple of recipes that were emblematic of Rochester, or at least I would say emblematic of Rochester and or emblematic of the potential of what we have here, what would you like to see in a book like that?
You know, I think if he was here, first of all, he absolutely would have a recipe for the garbage plate with the white hot. I've flipped through that book many times, his American Cookery, and just based on what he wrote in there, I don't think there's any doubt that he would have that in there, and he would write something funny about it as well as how it's connected to Rochester. But I think he would tie in the wineries of the Finger Lakes into what we have in Rochester. I feel like that's our largest claim to like the food and wine scene in our area. And focus on that, and then just, you know, we're a meat-focused town, you know, with the hot dogs and the sausages, and I think he would just sort of pick from that, from those sort of recipes and dishes that have been so prevalent and are, you know, still around with Zweigels and places like that.
But don't you think it's also possible, Art, that he would do that? He would have a garbage plate recipe. He would have some fun with that, but he would also then put the spotlight on the growing farm-to-table movement that's, you know, Lento's 10 years old now. You're the only James Beard-nominated chef in Rochester history. I would not be surprised if he then had a sort of a tip of the hat to this movement that's a decade old plus now in Rochester and includes some kind of a recipe that's closer to, you know, sort of the spirit of Lento. I mean, what kind of recipe would you love to see him grab, either kind of based on what you're doing or, you know, if you had the chance to kind of drop a recipe for it?
I think if he did something, we have so much great produce grown, you know, not only just in Monroe County, but obviously in all the surrounding counties. Just some sort of height of summer salad showcasing all the amazing produce that we have, especially, you know, right now. I know it's a little bit behind with the wet spring, but normally this time of the year, it's, you know, tomatoes, anything from tomatoes to beets and all the amazing greens that are out right now, and maybe showcasing a few of the local farms and the things that they grow so well, just something put together really simply with everything being grown, you know, right here. I mean, you could do it almost 100%, or you probably could do it 100%.
So lastly, before I let you go, it's always fun talking about food with you, putting menus together. And, you know, we've had some great conversations on the program about your thoughts on, you know, how you construct a menu and what you love to make versus what the marketplace kind of demands. So what's the most exciting thing that's on the Lento menu right now? When you're going to work the next time you're back in Rochester and you're cooking at Lento, what's the thing that you love when people order right now?
Well, we just put on this new dish. It's sort of like a Greek-inspired gyro sandwich. So we have some local lamb that we made some patties from and some house-made pita. And then we have all that nice produce on right now, some Bolton Bibb, some local field tomato, and then First Lake Creamery yogurt and feta sauce with a bunch of fresh herbs right from our Lento garden. I don't think it gets more local or more summer than a dish like that.
Love it. And, you know, your comment about the house-made pita reminded me that I had a meal out recently in which I thought the bread was so good, and this wasn't at Lento, by the way, I thought the bread was so good, and it drew to mind for me one of my ideas about dining, and I wonder if you agree, which is when the little details, or the sort of the ostensible little details, the bread, the side dishes, you know, when they are given incredible attention to detail and creativity, and they're not just an afterthought, I usually assume that the entire operation, top to bottom, is going to be really clever, really thoughtful, as opposed to, you know, when you've got a throwaway bread or that kind of stuff. Do you agree with that?
100%. I think I've said this on your show before. I order based on what the sides are. You know, if you see a steak, a steak's a steak, but what they've paired that steak with or what they've paired that piece of fish with, and based on how they've worded it, using words like house-made pita or, you know, locally sourced vegetables prepared a certain way, that's definitely the selling point for me. Couldn't agree with that statement more. That's what I look for when I go out to eat.
Art Rogers is the chef and owner of Lento, the only James Beard-nominated chef in Rochester history, and it's always nice to talk to you. We'll see you out at Lento sometime soon.
Likewise. Thanks, Evan.
All right, that's Art Rogers, and I will now turn it over to our two guests to get their reaction. But I thought, Chris Lidstrom, I'll start with you. I thought to hear a chef from a high-end restaurant say, absolutely yes, James Beard, if he were alive today, would have a garbage plate recipe. I thought that was pretty admirable of him not to push back on that. What did you think?
You know what? I think he hit it right on the nose. Our region, I mean, when you look at Buffalo, you look at Rochester, what are we known for? In the vast amount of the country, we're known for chicken wings and beef on whack in Buffalo. And here, we're known for the White Hot and the garbage plate and Genesee beer. I mean, those are our identifiable food landmarks right now. And I think the part that I really caught on to when he was talking about that is, where could we be going and what should we latch on to? And that's the Finger Lakes region, because we're tied together, Rochester and the Finger Lakes. We are tied together, and if we're not embracing that, I think we're missing out on a huge opportunity.
Eric Hooper, what did you think of what you heard from Chef Rogers there just about what James Beard would be doing? And did you have any disagreements? What did you think?
Yeah, no, actually, it was less surprising because he's not that's the second top-tier chef that I've heard say that in the past couple months. And not to give too much of a spoiler about a project that we're going to be dropping with Boomtown over the coming months, but it involved a conversation with Christopher Bates, another absolute powerhouse of a culinary and wine professional in our region. And we had much of the same conversation that involved White Hot, garbage plates a little bit, and then also one of the other things, again, more as a teaser than giving too much away, is Speedy's. You know, the evolution of what Rochester Finger Lakes barbecue is in the form of Speedy's chicken and Firehouse Chicken Barbecue. And not shying away from that. And, you know, and if you are at all familiar with Christopher Bates, you can see clearly that he takes that hot dog interpretation literally with the Zweigels and then with other kind of elevated expressions of that at the Finger Lakes Wienery. But if you want to get right into Rochester, go to Cure on a Sunday night. And, you know, again, they approach a hot dog. Maybe it's a little bit more invested than the Zweigels, but it surely embraces that part of our food identity. And I find it interesting, compelling, encouraging that you've got top-tier food professionals and chefs saying that because it needs to be approachable. Obviously, I could go the other way, too. I mean, I'm an organic vegetable farmer, and I raise organic pastured chicken, and I can talk for days about the merits of that and the direction that I hope we continue to develop. But I think it's a really legitimate part of the conversation, and we can't let our idealism, I think, kind of try to transcend who we actually are. I think we should leverage who we actually are to grow moving forward.
You know, you use the word idealism, Eric. I think others would say it's great that we don't let our snobbery push out the truth of our identity. And honestly, I mean, I thought it was refreshing what Art said. I think what you're saying is taking that to the next level, which is, okay, our identity, as Chris said, might be known as the garbage plate, that kind of a thing. But in that sphere, how do you include that, celebrate it, but also say, at the higher end level, look at what Cure's doing, look what Lento's doing, look what Chris Bates is doing, look at what this region is doing. That's sort of tied in with that thread. It doesn't dismiss it, it doesn't look down its nose at it, But it says we can go to the next level, and we can even do it in a way that celebrates local farming, best practices, and not to use a super corporate-y term, but really good practices with the land, with the animals. I mean, I find that much more of sort of an intellectually honest way than saying, oh, no, we're not a garbage plate town. Don't embrace it. Even though, Eric, I agree with Art, the word garbage and food together is probably not the best best marketing.
Yeah, I think I'm going to have to agree with him on that one, too.
Yeah, and I mean, really, ahead, I mean, the Rochester Red Wings are doing a promotion next week. They're not the Rochester local sourced agricultural products. They are the Rochester plates for one day next week. It is what we're known for. And if we shy away from it, you are ignoring that opportunity.
I want to grab our first phone call. And in our second half hour, we're going to talk a little bit about what makes the city sort of, you know, what makes for that reputation and how that may evolve. There have been people who've told me with Dinosaur, with a number of the other barbecue joints in town, that we're becoming a barbecue town. Well, one of my very close friends, Darren Mark, who used to be a morning reporter at Channel 13 and went out to Kansas City, he always tells me Kansas City is the barbecue town. You know, and Rochester has some good barbecue, but, you know, it's not quite the same. And so what kind of makes a city that way? That's another question which we're going to get to coming up here. Let me grab Beth in Rochester on the phone. Go ahead, Beth.
Hi. I love this conversation because I host a lot of international guests, and they always want to know, what's Rochester known for? And, you know,
what do you tell them? What do you tell them?
The Abbott, yeah. Michelot.
Yeah.
But the thing that I think that always gets missed, and it's kind of in line with the garbage plate, is how come we don't have our own hamburger wars here in Rochester? Back in the day, everybody had their favorite, whether it was Schaller's or Vic and Irv, Tom's Original, Don's, Bob's. You know, we have all these homemade burger places that started in Rochester, and everyone has a favorite based on the hot sauce. And you never hear about the hot sauce.
Okay. Well, Beth, thank you for weighing in with that. I certainly appreciate that. So let's ask Chris Lindstrom from Food About Town, his podcast. What do you think about that?
I don't like any of them.
The hot sauces?
No, I don't like hot sauce that much. I don't like the local hamburger style that much.
You're tough.
I'm going to capture some fire from this. But, you know, truthfully, when I go to the hots places, I only get white hots. And I'll get them with the sauce, but I never order Rochester style hamburger.
So you're not buying us as a burger town?
Oh, God, no. No, I don't like any of them.
Okay.
I like the Playhouse. I think they're doing some really good stuff, but that's separate from the Rochester style burger hots place.
Okay, very good. Eric Hooper, thoughts?
I probably have a little bit more maybe nostalgic love for the hot site places and growing up, you know, close by to some of those and becoming the regulars. But to that point, whether it's burgers or hot dogs, and then kind of to the previous point of Dinosaur and barbecue towns, I think that there's a misunderstanding there. We're like, you know, Dinosaur is great or whatever, you know, and Sticky Whips and all that. But I think that there's a difference, and there's an importance in recognizing the difference between a barbecue place in Rochester that advertises as a Kansas City-style joint or a Memphis-style joint or a Carolina-style joint versus just understanding what barbecue is to us. Barbecue means very different things in every part of the country and even in micro-regions of country. You know, I spent 7 years in Virginia, and we were close to the Carolina border, and I mean, that just like completely opened my mind to vinegar-based barbecue, but that just is almost a county-to-county thing. I think what's important for us to understand, if we really want to embrace our barbecue identity, which I firmly believe that we have, it is looking closer to home. It's understanding Rochester barbecue as burgers, as dogs, as that speedy-style chicken, you know, that firehouse-style Italian-influenced kind of Americanized chicken, and that can go into, you know, other proteins, and we can get into, you know, more like pig pork style barbecue, and I think that we offer that. But I think that the danger when we're trying to really strive so hard for an identity in that is that we're just looking to mimic other places.
Yeah.
Whereas if we step back, we actually do have our own barbecue identity, and we have had it for decades. And it's embracing that and seeing where that can take us.
Eric, that reminds me of being in the Finger Lakes 15 years ago and how many wineries had comparisons to German Riesling, even California and West Coast Reds for the Reds, which is a terrible analog in most cases for what the Finger Lakes does, because what the Finger Lakes does is wonderful, cool climate wines, which is not a pejorative. It's absolutely a secret handshake kind of a wine that is showing up on wine lists everywhere now. But it was like this almost apologistic that, well, our Riesling is like this, our reds are like this, in the same way that our barbecue is like somebody else, instead of knowing what is your identity and grabbing on and embracing that. And if you listen to Chris Lindstrom's podcast, Food About Town, next week, we might talk about identity in that way.
We definitely did.
Yes, we did.
It was a lot of fun.
As I recall. You want to add to what Eric was saying?
It's kind of interesting to hear talk about the Speedy. And I grew up in Buffalo, so Chevetta's was the name of the day in Buffalo. You can't go around a corner without smelling that vinegar acrid barbecue smell. When I hear barbecue, I take it towards that long smoke, towards the other things. And Speedy, I almost consider more of a Syracuse thing than a Rochester thing. We're getting very regional at this point.
Yeah, man. So I think those lines.
Yeah, I think for me, I get like when I hear Rochester barbecue, it doesn't evoke anything for me personally. I mean, I've been here for 15 years. It doesn't evoke anything for me personally.
You mean in terms of a Rochester barbecue identity?
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess I consider hots and burgers a grilled thing versus barbecue. I guess probably semantics versus anything else, but. I definitely see Eric's point on that is to try and embrace what we do have and make it the best we can with the amazing agricultural center we are.
All right, let me grab another phone call. This is Jacob in Rochester. Go ahead, Jacob.
Yes, good afternoon, Evan. I was waiting to hear about chicken French.
That's a Rochester.
Given the restaurant's available, it would be Mr. Dominic's is our classic. And it's chicken French and veal French. Dipped in the egg wash, and then lots of wine and lemon juice.
That's a great point. Jacob, thank you for the phone call. And I will say this, not being a native Rochesterian. When I came here, Jerry Manley made a chicken French for me, and I thought it was great. And I kind of thought, as I moved into cooking more myself, I kind of figured that was some kind of a staple elsewhere. And I think I mentioned it in Cleveland. People were like, what? Chicken what? So I don't know the history, so I'm speaking a little bit out of school, but Jacob's point is that is more core to our identity. Chris?
Yeah, and it's definitely a dish that Rochesterians are very fond of. And I'll say again, and I'll probably get some fire for this, I have not had a single piece of chicken French that I enjoyed. Not one. And I guess it's also something that a lot of the restaurants that are sourcing properly and trying these techniques, trying to elevate techniques. I haven't seen many that have even tried to reproduce it. So it's mostly at the older school restaurants. And I think we kind of lack some of the high-end techniques to keep everything bright and crisp and really amplify the chicken flavors too.
Okay, so Eric Hubert, on the chicken French thing, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm going to lean towards the direction of putting that more in my personal footnotes of culinary identity, not necessarily what I want to be known for in a region. However, like anything, I think it's an important part of the conversation. And again, just to kind of use the example, that there seems to be clearer culinary identities in the South, so we always had that direction. But having spent 7 years there, there is as many maybe undesirable culinary items that places are famous for, country ham or ham rolls or sweet tea. And we know those as a part of, talk about Southern cuisine. But when we're really talking about identity of place, when it comes to food, we start to talk about the better, maybe more fuller expressions of, the smoked meats and the Southern style barbecues and the vinegar based sauces. And I think that's maybe where we're at too, is just drawing the lines a little bit. Like, yeah, everybody knows that Jell-O comes from Avon and that French's was here and that we've got, some of these, a garbage plate. And of course, they're part of the conversation. But just as any region kind of has, for the lack of a better word, maybe some of those more like mass-produced or cheaper food commodity type items, I'm more interested in really digging into and really looking back and looking forward to like the real powerful statements that we can make with food, because I believe that they are there for the making.
All right. Well, I will say, producer Megan Mack has a friend who was recently in L.A. and was out with some friends and bumped into an actor who said, "Oh, you're from Rochester? tell me about chicken French. I don't know how that happens, you know. So, but
we have to acknowledge it then.
Yes. If LA has heard of chicken French, then we may have to own it, Eric Cooper.
I guess so.
On Twitter, in a number of places, we're seeing people weighing in. I think some really good comments here from Rachel. Rachel says, I think our food identity is the perfect mix of high and low. Garbage plates that will knock your socks off and fresh from the farm cuisine from one of the most agriculturally rich regions in the country right in our own backyard. So I think that lines up with what some of our guests are saying here as we try to alight upon a food identity. John says, classically, I think it's the old Italian-American, pressed burger joints, fish fry, white hots, and Jenny. Though Chris Lindstrom made one of our listeners, Josh, upset when he said, you know, he's going to call for pitchforks at you about the burger comment. He says Shaler's is an institution.
That sounds about right. My buddy goes there all the time.
But you don't.
Oh, God, no.
Okay. Okay. So there, see, not everybody agrees, but we're trying to figure out where we are when it comes to sort of an accepted regional identity. I've got to get our only break of the hour. We're going to come back to your phone calls. Stan, hang there. We're going to get your call here as well. And if you want to call the program as we discuss what is our food identity and culture in Rochester on the Summer of Food, it's 844-295-TALK, toll-free, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. You heard from Art Rogers earlier this hour, the chef and owner of Lento Restaurant. In studio with me is Chris Lindstrom, who is the founder of the Food About Town podcast and the co-founder of an initiative called Frankly, with a PH, which, again, one more time, what's Frankly?
Transparency in food sourcing, trying to make everybody aware of where their food's coming from, and also finding your favorite products.
What's wrong with an F? Why did you do the PH?
It's the internet. You have to make your word spelled wrong. Come on now.
Wow. I don't know how I feel about that. I feel about that the way you feel about local business. And Eric Cooper is on the line with us. He is a farmer with Mud Creek Farms, and he is the agricultural editor for Boomtown Table Online. Let's get that break. Back to your phone calls and comments next on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Friday on the next Connections, the conservative writer Kevin Williamson says we should scrap the term Made in America. He says with the global supply chain, it doesn't mean anything anymore. We examine Rochester's place in the global supply chain and whether Made in America still has meaning. Then in our second hour, Lee Koontz, artistic director of the Gateways Music Festival, which is coming up. He's got a fascinating history. We'll preview the festival and talk about his career. Welcome back to Connections. Every Thursday at 1 p.m. throughout the summer, we call it the Summer of Food, a different conversation about trends, news, profiles of the local agricultural, dining, and food scene. And we're having a lot of fun today talking about what is our food identity and culture in Rochester, whether we like it or not. What is it? And my colleague Danielle Swartz is here. She's in charge of events at WXXI, and this is timely. It's not the only reason we're here today, but you've got something coming up that... Actually, we do, because I'm going to be there on Saturday.
Yeah, you are.
That's good for me to know my calendar.
Yes. I'll be there, too.
You're going to be there on Saturday,
oh,
too. Chris Lindstrom's going to be there. Everybody's
yes.
going to be there. What's going on Saturday?
All the cool people are. We're having Barbecue Brews and Blues with Chef Steven Reichlin. If you are a fan of PBS, especially our cooking channels, you are familiar with Chef Steven Reichlin. He is, I will say, a barbecue icon, barbecue and grilling icon. He's coming to Rochester. We're having an event on Saturday from 1 to 3:30 at Frontier Field. Mr. Reichlin's going to be there. Evan's going to be there. I'm going to be there. Chris is going to be there. We're going to have all-you-can-eat barbecue. We're going to have blues music from the Tommy Burnett Band, Genesee beer. There's going to be a cooking demonstration by Steven. There's going to be a barbecue amateur competition with an award ceremony. And everybody gets one of Steven's latest books, Barbecue Sauces, Rubs, and Marinades, with their ticket. So you get an autographed book with your ticket along with the food and the drinks. So it's going to be an incredible afternoon celebrating what Rochester is apparently known for, which is barbecue. And just to get to that identity, when I was talking to Steven months and months ago about this event, he independently brought up that he knew that Rochester was a barbecue town. So, and he lives in Arizona. So it's making it that far. So I would say that's at least, a check on that's part of our identity.
That's
there.
Part of the identity. So once again, that's Saturday, where?
Frontier Fields. Tickets are available at the door. They are $50 per person. You get the food, you get the drink, you get the book with it. You'll get to see Steven cook. You get to eat all you want and enjoy a really great afternoon of really good barbecue.
Starts at 1 o'clock.
1 o'clock.
1 o'clock, Frontier Fields, Saturday. Thank you, Daniel. I will see you there because I will be there.
Yes, you will.
Okay. Yes, indeed I will. That's Daniel Swartz, who's in charge of events at WXXI. So, yeah, talking barbecue. And I want to get back to some of your phone calls. We've got listeners who really think that we need to be talking more about Wegmans, and Mark in Pittsford is going to go there among some other places. Go ahead, Mark.
Hi. A couple of things. One, New York strawberries. They're like nowhere on earth. They're worth traveling cross-country to New York just to have them in the spring. Two is beef on weck. I don't know if somebody might have mentioned that before. And three is the scratch breads at the bakery at Pittsford Wegmans.
Okay. So, Mark, thank you for that. Beef on weck, I think Chris Lindstrom mentioned earlier, but that's more of a Buffalo idea.
Definitely more of a Buffalo thing. We have a few places to do it here, but it's definitely a Buffalo thing. And I'm going to ruin my complete reputation in Rochester and say that anybody that says you should go to Wegmans as an out-of-towner shouldn't be talking about places in Rochester.
Oh, man!
I can't stand it.
You've got to be in your bonnet today.
I know I do. I'm an insufferable snob. I can't abide by it. It's a grocery store. It's a very good grocery store. I'd much rather you say go to the public market on Saturday, go to the Brighton Farmers Market on Sunday, really embrace what we're doing great here, the local producers. Wegmans is great in its own way, but really try to deal with the farmers. You're getting great products. I mean, I'm sure our other caller on the phone will say more about that.
That's Eric Hooper, who's with Boomtown Table and Mud Creek Farms. Go ahead, Eric.
I think I have a little bit more love for Wegmans, so I see it as a very, very fortunate and necessary part of a larger system. Having been in different parts of the country, there is nothing like Wegmans as far as a large-scale grocery store. So I do appreciate it. On that note, obviously, I do think what we have, and I mean what Rachel talked about, I couldn't agree with more, just this balance of high and low. I think that's exactly where we need to have the conversation when it comes to food identity. And I think Mark's point with seasonal strawberries, and to look back to what Art said about, you know, the recipe that he wishes, that high season salad, you know, so of course I love Wegmans, and I think that it is an important part of our food identity as far as a driving force behind the more consumer part of it. However, what we have that I believe virtually nowhere else in the U.S. has is a seasonally robust food system. And, you know, as look, oh, you've got California as the obvious example, but California is California 365 days a year. And that might seem okay, but it has lots of problems. You know, on an agricultural level, it presents challenges. And I think on a culinary level, not to, like, try to stump on the East Coast or anything, or West Coast, excuse me, I think it can fall a little bit flat eventually. I personally, maybe it's because I'm born and raised here, think that there is immense joy in restraint, and that's appreciating the seasons. You know, I think that my weekend on the lake this weekend is going to be that much more joyous for me because I can't be there 6 or 8 months of the year. And I think that the same proves true for food. You know, fruit, strawberries, blueberries. Go to Serendipity and tell me that you're not in heaven picking blueberries for the previous few weeks and the next few weeks in Penyan, or have strawberries or peaches or apples. They just won't be as good if you had them 365 days a year. So this idea of high summer food, throw as Weigel's on the grill, but have it next to a salad of heirloom tomatoes and heirloom cucumbers that we're growing on our farm. And it's the perfect balance of high and low for me. And that is what I hope the culinary identity is and becomes more. So yes, go to the farmers markets. If you come in from out of town, go to Brighton on Sunday. We have them virtually any day of the week around the city. So I think that that is a critical part of embracing our food identity.
All right, so let me get back to listener comments on this, and we're getting a flood. This is wonderful. I'm thrilled to hear from our new colleague who just started today, Tiana Magnon, who is a reporter with WXXI News and also a editor-in-chief of Open Mic Rochester. And Tiana just cautions us, don't forget Puerto Rican food. The second highest population per capita means we've got some great restaurants. I still have not been to El Pilon, and I cannot wait to go. I want to appeal directly to listeners right now. If I want to get great Puerto Rican food locally, I'm thinking of places like that. Chris Lindstrom.
I'm embarrassed, for one, for you.
I know.
That you haven't been there.
I know.
It's right around the corner. El Pilon is a gem here in Rochester. We should be known for our Puerto Rican and Dominican food. El Latino over on Chilay Ave. There's so many great places in and around the city. And if you're not going out and exploring these places, you're doing a complete disservice to some of the great food that Rochester is making right now.
Oh, so thank you, Tiana. Danielle, you immediately were like, yes.
Yeah, El Pilon is the pork. I dream about that.
I think we need a Summer of Food episode just on El Pilon and the food culture in the Puerto Rican community.
Yeah, and see if they'll bring some to the studio.
No. That's not why.
Don't do that.
The microphone, people can hear you. That's not why they come here. We don't even accept it. We can't.
No, we're going to go there.
All right, I'll eat it on the air and you can talk about it. That sounds great.
Okay, so thank you, Tiana, for that. Want to pull in another phone call. Let's see here. This is Stan in Rochester next. Go ahead, Stan.
Hey, I'm glad to hear Chris redeem himself by mentioning El Latino, because as a former burgerologist for the Rochester Food Net, I said, wait a second, this in Rochester's hot sauces, there's so many different variations as you go to the different restaurants that it's, you know, you can't just categorize it as a generic saying, hot sauce, as I like to phrase it, it's bonus meat, is a really important part of the Rochester burger experience. But I'd also like to mention, and this has been overlooked, because we talk about Speedies and Chevettas, but we've forgotten about the Country Suite. We've forgotten about the Snuffy's Birdland, which used to be Smitty's. Mm. We've forgotten about even some of the great sauces created by the late, great Uncle Ralph Bushy. May he rest in peace. And I would like to throw out a couple mentions. One, Calabrasella's on Buffalo Road. They have a great selection of sauces there. And they also have a website, nystyledeli.com, where people who are expats can order Zweigels, all sorts of Rochester ingredients, so they can bring the taste of Rochester to wherever they live. I send care packages to my brother-in-law outside of New York City, mm-hmm. and to my relatives down in Atlanta, and they love it. I like the idea, you know, the James Beard concept of elevating a Rochester staple. And there's a couple places, one that formerly was in existence. They had a plat de refuse, which is a French translation of garbage plate. That was fantastic. But presently, I think if you're looking for a high upper-end garbage plate, probably the Gatehouse with the gate plate is just delicious, and it's something that they've evolved over the years. And I tell people who are out of town who aren't going to go to Nick Tahoe's to go there and try that. So anyway, Chris, I love you. You know, you're a fellow Yelper, and I'm just going to give you forgive you for your transgressions, my friend.
I appreciate that, Stan. You're a good man.
Thank you, Stan. How dare anybody disagree? Eric Hooper, you want to respond to some of what you just heard there?
Yeah, I mean, I think I think it's on point. I mean, I think the conversation continues to go back to some of the same core ideas, and it seems to be, in my maybe it's just, you know, my age is kind of like an upper side of the millennial spectrum that, you know, it gets divided too quickly between, you know, it can't be these old things, it can't be the garbage plate, it can't be hot dogs and burger joints. One that I think we're, and just for all the things that we're missing, because we only have so much time to talk about it, a huge thing that Rochester has in the surrounding region is diners, diner culture, diners and sub joints. I mean, you do not get them like you get them here, in my opinion, based on where I've traveled. Mm-hmm. But it does. It goes back to this, you know, I think kind of clearing the divide a little bit between, you know, it has to be all high-end, artisanal, farmer's market, whatever, or, you know, it's garbage plates and dinosaur. I think that there's plenty of room for both. And I think that if we're all honest, we find our happy places in both arenas.
Chris Lindstrom, thoughts on that?
Yeah, and I think I want to wrap around a few of my favorite places that I think, you know, embrace, you know, using local food. And I do like that up-down idea. I mean, we have places like, you know, Cedar Mediterranean that are doing great Lebanese food. Flower City Bread, it's one of the least pretentious places you can go. You walk in, mm-hmm. you buy bread, you leave. But they're still sourcing local for everything and doing some of the best bread I've ever had in the country.
Yes. Yeah, definitely. Yep.
Places like Fiorella, right down the road from Flower City, they're sourcing local. They're hand-making all their pastas. It's some of the best simple food I've ever had, and at a super reasonable price point with local sourcing, but completely approachable.
From Mud Creek Farm.
Absolutely. Yeah, Mud Creek's there. Mud Creek's at the Playhouse. And you can find more about Mud Creek on Frankly.
There you go.
But yeah, and there's, and I think the other thing I want to talk about for a second is the Finger Lakes Wine Connection. We've talked about it a little bit, and I'll highlight it more in my podcast with Evan, but my friend Michael Warren Thomas does a website called New York Wine Spotting, and I still find it kind of embarrassing, especially the more and more I get into the wine scene, how few restaurants really embrace the Finger Lakes wine list here in and around Rochester. We're an hour away from what is now a nationally renowned wine scene all around, and we need more of it on our restaurant wine list. And we should take that time to tell restaurants that we deserve to get our local products highlighted on the menus.
Yeah, Michael Warren Thomas, who is the voice, by the way. He's got the voice. For all of us men in broadcasting, Michael Warren Thomas is the guy we look at with envy, and we go, that guy, born with that.
Perfect.
He's a great voice, but I think his effort is an important one, because in the United States, you're not going to be like the European countryside where all the restaurants carry is whatever the local wine scene is, but they can do more.
Yeah.
They can clearly do more. And I think that's what Michael is driving at here. So let me, our phones are nuts. I love the feedback here on the Summer of Food, and I'm glad, listeners, you're enjoying this. Let me grab a couple more phone calls, but first, an email, a couple emails that came in. CJ says, when I travel to visit Rochester expats, I bring Nance's mustard, Sal's Birdland sauce, a Finger Lakes white wine, grape pie, Zweigel's white hots, and apples. The best. That is,
wow.
That's from CJ. And Joel writes to us and just says that he thinks there's a mini revolution in vegan food and restaurants locally with Red Fern, Kitchen Verde, Misfit Donuts, and some of the obvious groups, Rochester Area Vegan Society. He says there's just so much going on. Even John's Tex-Mex has a vegan special every Monday. And the Red Fern has a compost plate.
It's good.
That rocks.
Oh, I've had it.
So a vegan garbage plate.
So good.
So,
and you can feel good after you eat it.
Absolutely.
Which is different than the normal garbage plate usually.
And if a vegan restaurant like Red Fern has its own version of a garbage plate, then, and I don't know if they can admit that without getting sued, but I think they can. If they have it, then really the garbage plate has permeated the culture. It just morphs into different forms. Let me get back to the phones and Karen in Irondequoit next. Go ahead, Karen.
Hey, it's Karen Dial.
Hi, Karen.
Hey, how are you?
Very good.
I used to do the restaurant column for the paper. Moved away to Vermont for about 4 years and just back and enjoying the variety of foods we have here, appreciating them. But I think we forgot to touch on the fact that a lot of these tastes that we call, you know, quintessentially American came to us from immigrants. Mm. And, you know, Nick Tahoe was from Greece. His hot sauce actually was a Mexican recipe. Nate Cianciola, who was part of the chicken French movement, was from Italy. Down in the Finger Lakes, you've got Daniel from Daniel's Heuriger. Mm-hmm. So a lot of these things, they're bringing tastes of their culture here and adding our ingredients.
I mean, that's such a good point. Stay there, Karen. Chris Lindstrom first. Isn't that a great point?
It really is. I've got a couple things to expand upon that. I went on a trip not that long ago to Utica with my friend Chris Clemens from exploringupstate.com. And we went and did a food tour of the immigrant refugee food of Utica, which was just fascinating. They have a big Bosnian population. They were some of the original Vietnamese immigrants to the U.S. And I definitely tell you to go back and look at that on Chris's website. But also, we've got great stuff here, not only from the classics, but some people doing amazing things now. My friend Neeraj Lama, who's running a Leaf Tea Bar and Happy Earth Tea, is one of the true gems of Rochester right now. It's tea direct sourced from India and China and all these Nepal, all these great places. And he's a man that is doing Rochester proud while still celebrating where he came from and, you know, these amazing products coming from this area of the world. And I couldn't tell people more to go to somewhere like that.
Eric Hubert from Boomtown Table, thoughts there?
Yeah, I think it's a very fair point. It's one that we need to pay attention to. I mean, and really it's true of all of the food that we eat. I mean, America as a whole is a young country and one that is built entirely from immigrants. And then the native population influencing that as our food as well. But all of it is an influence from something else. You know, we are kind of second generation children as far as our cultural expression of food. And I think that that's an important part when we're trying so hard maybe to establish a food identity, understand that the rules have changed a little bit. You know, we are more of a melting pot. We're not going to be creating some distinctly unique, independent food, a palate that hasn't existed before. I think we're going to be melting together all that we are, all that makes our community, food and otherwise, to influence what our plates look like, what they taste like.
Yeah.
And that's a really important part of how we look at it.
Yeah, Karen, I remember when Lydia Bastianich was here as a guest of WXXI, and somebody brought up, you know, quote-unquote Italian restaurants and Italian food. She had such a beautiful answer. She said, think about Italian immigrants who came here. What they wanted to do was recreate the recipes that they grew up with in Italy, but they couldn't get always all the same ingredients, and so sometimes they took what they could and they fused it with what they found locally. So faux Italian is like, everything is spaghetti and meatballs. Like, come on. But there is an Italian fusion that's more Italian fusion or Italian American than it is purely Italian. And there is something really beautiful about how immigrants take what they have learned and grown up with and then fuse it to the culture that they bring in here, don't you think?
Yeah, and that they come from different regions in Italy, and the different tastes are different, you know, on the availability of seafood or maybe, you know, local cheeses. And, you know, we think of it as, like you said, spaghetti and meatballs, but there are people that are introducing us to the nuances of the different regional Italian foods, and that's great.
Karen, thank you. What a great phone call, just to kind of redirect our attention and appreciate all of the different threads that make up a community, especially a food community. And speaking of, Jen in Washington, lives in Washington now. Jen, you are an expat, is that right?
I am an expat. I'm from upstate New York, originally lived in Rochester for 8 years, have been down in D.C. for 15, and I just so happened to be here this week for work. And I had to interrupt listening to you because I was getting out of the car to get an Abbott's cone before I went back to the airport.
There you go. So what do you think expats want and sort of think about our food culture here?
I have to say, I was listening to the folks talking about the high and low, and I have to say, I think most expats think of the low. They think about their favorite. They think about their favorite sauces. They think about salt potatoes, which I'm still trying to figure out how to get in my luggage. those things don't exist. And I have to say, I'm struck by the comment about the Italian-American influence here. I live in D.C., which over the last 15 years has been transformed into a world-class food city. I cannot get good Italian-American, and I can't get good subs. And those are things that I look for when I come back in some of my favorite restaurants. And I had a great sub while I was here. Can't get anything like it in D.C.
Mm-hmm.
Makes me miss being here, tell you that.
Well, Jen, thank you for the phone call. What kind of Abbott's did you get? Chocolate almond, I hope.
No, actually, I'm a classic. I actually go with the vanilla, but I like the mint chocolate sprinkle.
Oh, yeah.
Same thing every time.
So does my 5-year-old. So does my friend. Loves that.
A solid choice.
Jen, thank you for the phone call. And interesting insight. Eric Cooper, we're going to get ready to wrap it up in a minute here. But, I mean, I just have a pile more of comments. Phil says, Speedies are definitively a Binghamton thing. They may have spilled over to Syracuse, but Binghamton is the only place that has a bunch of Speedy shops.
There you go.
So there's, again,
fair enough.
Turf wars there. Teresa writes to us and says, I just want to say I grew up in Rochester, I've been living in New York City for 30 years, and now split the difference, and all of my friends from New York City love Rochester hamburger joints, Chris Lindstrom. And they love Mr. Dominic's. She says as well. So, but she despises White Hot. So it takes all kinds, everyone. We don't all love the same things. Eric, some final thoughts from you as we think about our food culture here. I have really enjoyed this conversation. And frankly, for me, it's been inspiring to think about the diversity of what we have here. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. And I think that it boils back down to one of the things that I'm most passionate about, kind of what Chris mentioned with Flower City Bread, is that we have such high quality produce. We have such high quality producers, bakers and butchers all the way from the Finger Lakes up to the city, and something that is distinctly Rochester that I hope transcends into all of our food identity is the lack of pretension. Just come as you are, come
yes.
and enjoy, and I think that's
right.
where the high and low can meet each other.
Yeah. Oh, gosh, is that well said. You know, I'm I could say things that I would regret, but I'm not. I'm just going to say that is beautifully said, because food, no matter what the price tag on it, should be about authenticity to the best it can be, not about impressing somebody, not about checking a box and being able to say you went somewhere. Even though, look, I got to check the box for LP Loan. We've established
100%.
That. 100%. Some final thoughts from you.
No, and I think that's
30
that's a
seconds.
It's a great point by Eric. Embracing the best of what we have locally. We've got national level stuff. We've got Joe Bean Coffee. We've got ciders, some of the best cider in the country coming out of our region. South Hill Cider, Eve Cider, places like McCann's. This is a destination place if you find the best things to get to. And
which doesn't always mean the most expensive.
No, God, no. And pretension, when I did restaurant reviews for the city paper, I would go into restaurants wearing shorts and a t-shirt whenever it was, and I would expect the same level of service and attention. And I can say Rochester embraced that challenge in almost every way they could.
Online where? Food About Town.
Foodabouttown.com and frankly, PHRANK.LY.
Okay, online Boomtown Table. Eric Hubert, where?
BoomtownTable.com, and if you're interested in local food, check us out at MudCreekFarden.com.
And Danielle Swartz, we'll see you Saturday where?
Saturday, Frontier Field, Barbecue Brews and Blues with Stephen Reichlin. 1 p.m., we hope to see everybody there because I'm sure you're hungry after this conversation.
$50 a person gets you barbecue, drink, a book,
music.
Signing. You even will see me.
Yes.
Definitely there. I'll see you there. Eric, thank you. Great fun. Chris Lindstrom, thank you.
Thank
I'll see you on your podcast soon.
Subscribe now, iTunes.
Very
Google
good. Look, you're so good. Rob Braden, Megan Mack, I'm Evan Dawson. It's the Summer of Food. Have a great day, everyone.